Gators Breakdown, the Gators Fan Podcast, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown Podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Our 2018 final rankings are out. Way too early. 2019 rankings are also out. And recruiting is in full swing for the Gators. And to break it all down with me is Will Miles. You can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSEC and his site, readandreaction.com. Will, you join me the day after Clemson destroys Alabama in the national championship game, last game of the season for the 2018 season. We'll get into where the Gators are and the highly ranked Gators. But that was a complete butt whooping, plain and simple.
Yeah, it was a little bit less exciting than last year, that's for sure. But the second year in a row where a backup five-star quarterback has been a major player in the national championship game, and that's sort of where we're at this point, where you got high-level, elite-level quarterbacks being replaced by better ones who come in as true freshmen. And, you know, it's an interesting arsenal that both of those teams are starting to build or have built or are starting to build. And, you know, I look forward to the next few seasons while Mullen tries to catch up.
Yeah, that's the thing. And we'll have a viewer question later on of the Gator standard and kind of the parameter was what can Florida do to catch up to Alabama. But if they're going to have to catch up to Alabama because Alabama's not going anywhere. No matter what happened last night, Clemson's not going anywhere either. Georgia's probably going to be in that mix too. You know, we'll get into all these polls and stuff, but you look at Clemson and Alabama, they were the two best teams before the season. They were the two best teams during the season, two best teams in the playoff. And Clemson kind of just put themselves on a pedestal for this 2018 season.
Yeah, all I know is I'm enjoying going and watching the Alabama message boards while people are telling where they're complaining that the game has passed Saban by and that he no longer needs to be the coach there. I long for the day when Florida ends up finishing second, and that's just an unacceptable result. And hey, we haven't really experienced that since 1995 in that game against Nebraska. So, we win when we get there. So that's what's important.
Hashtag fire Saban. There we go.
Well, there's a fire Kirby movement out there too. So I'm ready for it. We'll bring him in as like a Butch Jones assistant.
Well, Alabama, him being on the sidelines, I did tweet this last night. Alabama is champions for life this year. So they got that going for him.
Oh man. Yeah. Well, what was it? Either Alabama won and we had to hear them complaining or Alabama lost and we had to hear Danny Cannell. That was pretty much the choice we had last night. So I'm not all that excited about that, but I am excited about, where Florida ends up and sort of being able to recap that. So enough about Bama, man.
There we go. Speaking of Cannell, the mute button is your best friend on Twitter. So that's where I'll go with that one. Here we go. We'll break it down. All the rankings, 2018, 2019, all that good stuff. But before we do, remember, you can find Gators Breakdown on news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. There you'll find all the Gators Breakdown episodes as well as articles from the News4Jax sports team. Catch us on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and Spotify. And when using those services, please share, rate, and review Gators Breakdown. And on social media, follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Gators Breakdown. So, Will, the final rankings for the 2018 season have been released after a 10-3 season in Dan Mullen's first season for the Gators. And he gets the Gators up to sixth in the final coaches poll of 2018, at one spot behind Notre Dame, and in front of LSU at 7, and in front of Georgia at 8. First time in the top 10 in the coaches poll since 2012, when the Gators finished 10th, and the highest ranking in the coaches poll since 2009, when the Gators finished 3rd. Also released on Tuesday, the Gators ranked 7th in the final AP poll, tied with Georgia and one spot behind LSU. This is the highest finish for the Gators in the AP poll since 2009 as well. And their first finish inside the top 10 since 2012, when the Gators finished 9th. So Mullen joined Galen Hall in 1985 as only first-year head coaches in Florida history to finish the season inside the top 10. And Mullen is the third coach in history to win 10 games in a debut season with a current Power 5 program after inheriting a team that won less than 5 games the year prior. So, Will, on the surface, Going from a 4-7 season to the 6th and 7th ranked team speaks volumes about the turnaround and the perception Florida has out there right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not sure you could have asked more coming into the year. I mean, obviously, you get a little bit greedy once you get through that Georgia game. And then if had they been able to win the game against Missouri, this turns into a top five season maybe. But end of the day, if you'd have told me they were going to finish 6th in the coaches' poll at the end of the year, I think I would have said, all right, yeah, that's exactly. Like, I will absolutely take that in year one. And I think most Gator fans would too. I mean, I don't think anybody thought this was going to be a national championship run, and it wasn't, but it does sort of set them up to finish to start in the top 10 next year and be one of those teams that people look at. And if Felipe Franks can take a major step forward, if the offensive line can gel with all the new guys who are going to be on it, if they can replace some of the guys who are leaving on the defense, they're going to have a chance to be pretty good next year. And certainly I think it's a reflection on Mullen and his coaching ability that he was able to take a lot of the same players that Jim McElwain had a year ago and mold them and scheme around maybe some of their weaknesses and be able to get the most out of them. So a very successful season for Florida, pretty good luck in one score games. And I think that's something we'll have to watch out next year because those tend to even out over time. But, you know, even if one of those has gone the other way, you're still looking at a 9-win season in the top 10 team. So, 10-3, 6th in one poll, 7th in another. I think it's an excellent start and we'll see where we go from here.
Yeah, so Gator Nation will, of course, like the coaches poll a little bit more since they're ranked 7th and not 7th. Notre Dame, which lost to Clemson in the Cotton Bowl, was 5th there. So, I have no issues. And there's a lot of thought out there in Notre Dame being in front of Florida. But look, they only lost one game. That one game was to the eventual national champion there. So no problem there with Notre Dame there. So and a lot of it also, you go look at the AP poll. LSU was 6th, and that didn't rub Gator fans the right way. And Florida and Georgia were tied for 7th, as I mentioned. LSU finished 6th with a loss to Florida, and the Gators being ranked ahead of LSU in the previous poll, beating them head-to-head, as I mentioned, in the regular season. Both teams winning their bowl games. So, Will, I know it is splitting hairs kind of between Florida, Georgia, and LSU, all have an argument of why one should be ahead of the others. But I think LSU probably gets a little too much credit here for beating Central Florida, jumping up the way they did, 5 spots from the previous poll ahead of Florida. And with what Florida showed and with what LSU showed, I saw very little reason why LSU should have jumped Florida in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can make an argument for any of those teams, right? I mean, obviously LSU beat Georgia, Georgia beat Florida, Florida beat LSU, and even Kentucky, if you wanted to throw them in there, I think at 12th. I think they have an argument to be up amongst those four as well, just based on the way they played in their SEC season and how they finished off the bowl game, beating Penn State. And I mean, that game wound up, I think, a 4-point win, but it was a lot wider than that. It was something like 28-7 going into the fourth quarter. So, I think when you look at the four teams in the SEC, you're really splitting hairs when you try to figure out who did what. I will say that one of Georgia's losses came to Alabama. And as much as I loathe to defend the Bulldogs, I mean, they lost the number 2 team in the country and they lost to, if you're depending upon which poll you're looking at, another top 10 team in LSU. So, and then lost to Texas, who's also in that sort of top 10 realm. So the teams Georgia lost to were all up there. I think Missouri is borderline top 25. Obviously Kentucky's a top 10 team and then Georgia's a top 10 team. So I can understand why people would have issue or would have difficulty ranking those guys in any sort of order. There's no coherent, oh, this team beat this team. I think it's really sort of the story of the SEC East this year is that there were a lot of very good teams. I don't know that there was a great team among them. We sort of thought Georgia might be, but Georgia lost an awful lot of firepower last year, and we sort of detailed that coming into the year. And so you had a lot of, I think, really good teams. I'm not sure you had an elite one. And, really the question is going to be which team can take that step next year. Obviously, Kentucky's losing a lot. LSU, I think is, LSU's bringing back Burrow and he's looked pretty good the last 3 or 4 weeks, just like Franks has. Obviously Florida's bringing back Franks and Georgia's bringing back Fromm. And so, it's going to be interesting. You've got these guys who are holdovers from last year who are, the guy who improves the most or the team that improves the most around him is going to be the team that takes that next step. And that's really what this is sort of doing is it's setting the stage for each of these teams to take that next step and potentially make a championship run next year because they're all going to get to play each other. So so they'll get to separate each other in 2019, no matter where they finish in 2018.
Yeah, we look at all these teams and finish there, and kind of just talking to a friend of mine, South Carolina. He's a South Carolina fan. Just kind of looking ahead, we'll look ahead at the Gators. But, you know, these teams that finished top 10 this year, Clemson winning the national championship. South Carolina has to play Clemson every year, of course. They got them next year. They have Alabama as their SEC opener. They have Texas A&M, which will probably be a borderline top 10 team. They have Florida. They have Georgia. So almost half of their schedule are teams that finished in the top 10 this year.
Yeah. So, A&M has Clemson too. So we're certainly – SEC is certainly going to get a shot at the ACC and a shot at the champion. And with Lawrence there, I don't think Clemson's going anywhere either. So, you know, it's going to be interesting next year to see whether either of those teams can really bow up. Because, you know, obviously Clemson dominated that game yesterday. But, I mean, Alabama put up a bunch of yards and was able to run the ball. Yeah. There were a lot of fourth downs they didn't get, a lot of stops in the red zone. I think they scored in one out of the four trips in the red zone. You know, if they put up three touchdowns, it's a lot closer game. Now, didn't feel like that because the defense couldn't stop Clemson no matter what they did. But, you know, I think those teams are probably closer than what was shown on the field yesterday. I think sometimes, you know, the snowball sort of starts rolling downhill and then all of a sudden, you know, it's just a cakewalk in one direction or the other. And we saw that a few years ago with Florida in 2006 with Ohio State, where I don't think Ohio State was as bad as Florida made them look, but certainly that sort of kicked off the SEC's dominance. And so I think people perceive that Ohio State was just seen as a much better team than they were, than they actually were. So, you know, we'll see. I think certainly it's good to see the SEC scheduling tough out of conference games. Florida has another one next year with Florida State and Miami, or at least legitimate Power Five programs. Whether they're going to be any good next year is something that I'm sure we'll be talking about during the offseason. But, you know, the move for these Power Five programs to be scheduling big time out of conference opponents, especially when their home schedule permits it. You know, there's a reason Florida had Michigan 2 years ago to open the year. There's a reason that they have Miami this upcoming year, and that they skipped it and had a cupcake this year. So, you know, the fact that they're scheduling these things, I think, is indicative that they know that it's necessary in order to get to where they want to go long term. I think it's also necessary from a recruiting perspective that you know, the guys who come to Florida from South Florida want to play Miami. And so having that sort of game on the schedule makes a difference. So, yeah, it's going to be a rough road for Muschamp there next year, or potentially could be a rough road if he doesn't pull out one of those. And you know, I'm glad that Florida gets Auburn and not Alabama next year. I think that's a nice break for the Gators. I mean, Auburn's a good team, but they're not Alabama.
Yeah, and but of course, we brushed over it, the whole Georgia thing. Yes, they beat Florida head-to-head. When it's all said and done, Will, at the end of the year, and, you know, I don't know how much of a bragging point it would be. But, yeah, tied for seventh in one poll and ranked ahead of Georgia in another. So, yeah, we may not have beat them head-to-head, but we can claim some small victory that when the 2018 season was over, Florida is ranked ahead of Georgia. And I'm kind of like you, yeah, they had to play Alabama, and let's not forget, in an extra game. So they had an extra game to lose, and, you know, if Florida was in Atlanta somehow, they probably would have lost that game as well. But they didn't, and Florida's ranked ahead of Georgia in one poll. So we can rub it in their face a little bit.
Well, yeah, and if I'm gonna troll Georgia, it's not gonna be with it. We're one spot ahead of them in the polls. Yeah. It's gonna be that Nick Saban's fake punt last night is the second worst fake punt in the SEC. That will definitely be the way that we have to troll Georgia fans on this one. So, hey, it's gonna be fun, man. We're back. Like last year, you had to sort of just take your medicine. Not only did we get our butt whipped by Georgia, but by a bunch of other teams and went 4-7. And, you know, there wasn't really much you could say to Georgia after they'd made their way to the national championship game other than, you know, second and 23. And this year we get to talk about Justin Fields and we get to talk about the fake field goal. So, or fake punt. So it's been a good last month. That's for sure.
All right, so we'll say goodbye to the 2018 season there with Gators being ranked in the top 10 officially in the official polls there. And, of course, look ahead to the 2019 season, and some publications have released their way too early 2019 rankings. It seems like these come out as soon as the clocks go zero on the national championship game, and the Gators are firmly in the top 10. ESPN has the Gators ranked seventh and go on to say, quote, Florida's sixth victory improvement from 2017 was among the best in FBS, and Mullen's 10 victories were one more than what Meyer and Steve Spurrier won in their first seasons at Florida. Even more impressive, Mullen did it while squeezing everything possible out of quarterback Felipe Franks, who ranked 10th in the SEC in passing. How much will a second season under Mullen help him? End quote. So, Will, I'll include some of the other polls here in just a second. But, you know, one more, the popular ones people will see will be this ESPN one because of the ESPN brand. And they have the Gators 7th behind the likes of Clemson, Bama, Georgia, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, and then Florida. So, you know, all those teams were fighting for or in the college football playoff toward the end of the season. And then it's the Gators that are next on the list. And I think it says a lot that in year two under Mullen, that there is this thought that Florida can be mentioned with these teams and sets up an offseason where Florida will be in conversations to win the SEC East and go to Atlanta.
Yeah, I think it clearly indicates that people still think Franks has room to grow, yep. That he's got physical tools, but that he's had limitations this year, and that with a full year in Mullen's program, with all the experience that he got this year and the confidence that he got going in towards the end of the year and the way that he played, that he's still got another level to go. And if you take Felipe Franks' performance this year and take it up the same percentage that he improved from last year, you're going to have a guy who's in the running for the Heisman Trophy. Now, I think that's probably a little bit aggressive. I think it's a whole lot easier to improve from really, really bad to slightly above average than it is to go from slightly above average to elite. But, you know, to go from slightly above average to a solid, solid, you know, top 30 quarterback, all of a sudden now you've got a Florida offense that's putting up 40 points a game. And, you know, a team that's putting up 40 points a game can compete with anybody. So I think that's really sort of what this is saying, is that people are recognizing that Mullen, just from the way he's able to scheme and the way he was able to take a group of players who really didn't have a whole lot of confidence coming into the game or coming into the year, and sort of turn them into a bunch, or, you know, a group who has a whole lot of confidence coming into the next year, you know, to be able to do that sort of sets them up to be able to make a run next year if they have an opportunity. I still think the vast majority of people are going to pick Georgia next year to win the East. I think Florida's still going to come in the underdog. I think that's based on talent profiles, that's probably true. But, you know, I mean, I think with all the guys who have sort of left Georgia, that the gap has expanded in terms of talent when you look at the recruiting class for Georgia this year versus Florida. But when you look at all the guys who've left, you know, that gap has sort of closed. And so, you know, all of a sudden now coaching becomes more important as that talent gap closes further and further and further. And, you know, when we talk about recruiting, we're always talking about percentages, right? That a team that has a whole lot more talent, you know, maybe wins 60% of the time or 65% of the time or 70% of the time. Well, you know, that still means 30 or 35% of the time the team with less talent has a shot. And I think with Mullen on Florida's side, the fans and the experts really think that Florida's always going to have a shot.
Will, breaking news here that we're going to be on breaking on Gators Breakdown. So some people will listen to the podcast version, but people out there listen to the live version. Jim Chaney is leaving Georgia and going to Tennessee as the offensive coordinator. So some coaching changes. Georgia will have to replace their defensive coordinator, Mel Tucker, and now their offensive coordinator, Jim Chaney. So we'll see what kind of happens there. I'm sure this probably wasn't too much of a surprise. I've kind of heard rumblings the last couple of days anyway, that could happen. And there's some Georgia fans, and I have a lot of Georgia friends, not entirely too impressed with Chaney, but I don't think they wanted to see him go, but maybe improve a little bit. So there we go. That was another big change that will happen before next season. So any thoughts there, Will, of, hey, look, Justin Fields as well. So, a lot of changes for Georgia, even though, they can, you know, have the talent that they've been stocking up the last couple seasons.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm like ultra happy he's gone, you know, whereas you see somebody like Lane Kiffin leave Alabama for a head coaching job and you say, okay, like, I'm glad he's out of Tuscaloosa. I think that this isn't a case like that. I mean, Georgia's offense was good. It wasn't spectacular. Really, Georgia, for the most part, if I'd have to look at the numbers, but I'm pretty sure relied on their defense a lot of times, especially last year, to really sort of carry them through some of the lulls. You didn't see a whole lot of, Fromm was very good last year, and this year he was about as good. So you didn't see a massive improvement for Fromm. And then somebody has to be the scapegoat when you don't hit those goals. And when you come out and when you look as bad as they did against Texas, and when you do some of the stupid things they did against Alabama. So, you know, Chaney, I mean, this is definitely a lateral move, right? To go as the offensive coordinator from Georgia, the offensive coordinator at Tennessee. And so it's clearly not a performance. Like, it's not like he's leaving for a better gig. It's not Kingsbury leaving USC to be head coach of the Arizona Cardinals or anything. It's, you know, it's a lateral move. And so you figure there had to be some unhappiness between him and Kirby, and potentially between him and some of the offensive recruits. And you know, you wonder whether Justin Fields getting less than 3 pass attempts a game, you know, whether that was Chaney's call or whether that was Kirby's call. And, you know, this is one of the things I think is really impressive about Nick Saban, is he brings in an unbelievable amount of talent, and very rarely do you hear them complain about it. I mean, I think the only time I can remember is Jalen Hurts talked a little bit before this year started, you know, that he hadn't really had a chance to talk to Saban and stuff like that. But for the most part, these guys, you know, the running backs who are all 5-star guys get 8 carries a game, and you never really hear him complain. And, you know, sort of the unrest at Georgia, I think, is indicative of, yes, Saban amasses an awful lot of talent, but there is skill to navigating keeping all of that talent happy. And, you know, clearly Kirby has shown he's got some deficiencies on the field, but, you know, maybe this is sort of another knock on him, that he has some issues with the personalities that he's bringing in. I mean, even though they're very, very talented, it's hard to keep people like that happy if you're not giving them playing time. And maybe that's what we're seeing.
Yeah. And the thing about this is, I know Tennessee fans may be excited about the Jim Chaney move to Tennessee, but you have that talent Georgia's had on that roster the last couple of years. That's going to make some offensive coordinators look pretty good. So I'd be interested. Can he build and have success as a play caller at the same time? As, you know, I don't think he'll have as much right away, because, like I said, there's running backs Georgia's had, and Fromm coming in and being a pretty good quarterback as well, makes it look a whole lot easier than, you know, Tennessee doesn't have that type of talent. So can he build and play call, you know, have play calls like he did at Georgia at the same time, instead of just already having the talent and the playmakers he had already when he got to Georgia. So let's get back to where Florida is in these way too early rankings here. I'll include a couple others here and the reassertion that the Gators will be highly thought of. Athlon Sports and 24/7 Sports also have the Gators 7th as well. So 3 polls here for way too early 2019 rankings, and all 3 have Florida 7th. Athlon says, quote, Mullen should be able to continue the momentum in 2019, as Florida should be comfortably inside the top 10 in preseason polls. While 24/7 Sports, Chris Sumner says, does this feel a bit high for the Gators? Yes, but I expect Florida to only improve in Mullen's second year. If Felipe Franks can make another jump as a junior and the offensive line comes together, Florida will be extremely dangerous next season in the SEC East. Will, can the season just start now? That's the question I want. I need a little bit of a break, but no, just, you know, just, it's been a while since we went into an off season like this, and looking at the way too early projections and Florida being firmly planted in the top 10, and all the positive thoughts of the head coach and Felipe Franks and the quarterback. And there's actually some thought out there now on a national level that Mullen can turn him into something better. He can be a quarterback that Mullen can build this offense around and contend for the SEC East. And when you contend for the SEC East, more than likely that if you end up in Atlanta, a lot of the times you're going to be playing for something more. And it kind of, we go back a year ago when Dan Mullen was hired. I didn't ever put myself in this situation. Was I a big Mullen fan? Was he my first choice to replace Jim McElwain? Absolutely. But even I didn't see this coming.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some things we need to take into consideration. One is that the SEC, typically you win at the line of scrimmage, and they have to replace 4 offensive linemen. They got to replace Ja'Kai Polite. They got to replace CC Jefferson on the defensive line. And then Voshon Joseph, who's really played close to the line of scrimmage. And, you know, each of those guys had different levels of consistency and different levels of play throughout the year. But I mean, I don't think anybody would argue that they weren't the best guy for the job this year. And so, you know, guys like Blake and Banks and Garage and all the new guys coming in on the offensive line, they're going to have to find the 5 guys who are that cohesive unit. I think they'll have a lot better depth, but I think they're probably going to have a lower ceiling than they probably had this year. Same thing with the defensive line. I mean, Polite was a special player there. Zuniga is a very good player coming back, but, you know, 2 years ago and 3 years ago, it was sort of, you know, those guys started, you didn't see as much production from them during SEC play. This year, I think Polite really maintained his play through SEC play, and Zuniga sort of. It wasn't quite as impressive what he did, though. It was still, I mean, what, I think 5.5 sacks, still a very good player. So, you know, there's a lot to replace on the defensive line, a lot to replace on the offensive line. The other thing I do think we need to consider is that there were not a lot of injuries at all, right? I mean, you had the suspensions to start the year where CC Jefferson wasn't necessarily playing against Kentucky. You had Malik Davis who went out, you had Marco Wilson who went out, and that was pretty much it. Right. I mean, you had a couple injuries during camp, and that's when Quincy Linton went out. But I mean, there was nothing like the MASH unit it was 2 years ago. And I think some of the depth that's being built on the offensive line and that sort of stuff is really going to benefit Florida next year. If the injury bug hits, the place I'd be concerned is on the defensive line, where they haven't necessarily had a whole lot of depth being built over the last couple of years in their recruiting. So, you know, I think it's just like any year, you come in and you say, okay, there's quite a bit of turnover. And what do we, you know, but obviously at key positions, we've got guys in place. So Frank's played quarterback all year long and, you know, he's back. And so you have some, you either have consistency there or you have somebody who beat out the guy who played all year, which is a good situation to be in. I think defensive back, again, you get Marco Wilson back, and you've got Trey Dean, who got an awful lot of experience this year, Amari Burney, that sort of stuff. So I think you can look at it and say there's an awful lot of talent coming back. But I think, you know, when you look at where games are won up front, Florida won those games more often than not this year. And it's going to be an open question. To me, it's less about Frank's development and more about the cohesion on the offensive line and the push on the defensive line. Those are the places that I think we'll need to look early in the season to understand the ceiling for this team.
Yeah, that's my question too. You got every, but Scarlett, you have every offensive skill player returning. And led by Piron, who was your lead running back. You have Davis back if he can get healthy. All your receivers are back. You're right. The offensive line, that's the question on offense. Okay, how fast can those guys come together? You open up with Miami there, who does have some talent on the long defensive line. You know, we'll have plenty of time to preview all that stuff. And on defense, you lose your playmakers on defense, your guys who could make tackles behind the line of scrimmage. Your guys who could go back there and go get some sacks. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, your roamer, who could be all over the field. So, yeah, we can point out the good here. That's every team's going to have to replace something, and that's what the Florida Gators are going to have to replace. And a lot of belief into what they're already bringing back, the things that we know will lead to a top 10 team. So, keeping with the theme of 2019, and it's been announced, Will, the list of early enrollees for the Gators, and that includes linebacker Mamu Diabate, offensive lineman William Arad, defensive back Jaden Hill, quarterback Jalen Jones, linebacker Josiah Pierre, offensive lineman Kingsley Igwekan, defensive back Chris Steele, offensive lineman Michael Tarquin, and offensive lineman Ethan White. So, Will, you look at it and break it down. 4 of the 7 signed offensive linemen are early enrollees, and your quarterback. So, you know, for offensive line, not too many true freshmen play, but still good for depth purposes to get them in, come in here, get them in the weight room, get them to develop there. And it's good to start that process as early as possible. Also, I think getting Jalen Jones in here as your quarterback, get him familiar with the playbook, get him familiar with the schemes and how fast college football is from the quarterback position, get his technique working on with Dan Mullen is a plus. And also, I really think, you know, defensive back, getting Hill and Steele in to shore up depth behind Henderson and Wilson. Wilson may be limited this spring coming back from his injury. Dean may move around from safety to cornerback to nickel. Hill also, even though he's coming in as a freshman, could be limited somewhat. He's coming off of an injury as well. But you're getting those defensive backs because you need to shore up. And we'll see what happens with Matt Elam down the road. We'll talk about that. Kyrie Elam. We'll see what happens there. But getting those cornerbacks that may have to fill in behind Wilson and Henderson, I think are key as well.
Yeah, I think the offensive line, I mean, you mentioned that true freshmen don't always play. I think they're going to have to play. I mean, you look at who they've got at tackle. They got Forsyth, DeLance, Banks, and Garage. They got 4 tackles. Is one of those guys ready? And did the experience that they get this year really put them to a point where they're ahead of Tarquin, Wilson, Herod, or White? You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I'm not sure Mullen does either, probably. They're bringing in 7 offensive linemen this year, and so – you know, it's not, those guys are going to have to play. You get any injury at all and they're going to have to play. And so it's going to be important. It's important that those guys are coming in early, that those guys are getting the kind of experience that they're going to get in the spring camp, the strength and conditioning, as you mentioned, you know, just really sort of getting them immersed in the program, getting them used to being on campus. I mean, I remember when I first went to Florida and sort of the first couple of weeks and how discombobulated I was. I imagine just being there in the spring and figuring out where to buy your groceries and stuff is sort of, you know, an important part of coming, and to be able to do that during the spring camp rather than doing it while you're practicing for the fall and getting ready for the season, I think is an advantage for anybody. And yeah, obviously on the defensive backfield, I mean, you know, there are, with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson leaving, there are obviously some big shoes to fill. Certainly, I think the injury to Marco Wilson was a terrible thing and you'd never wish that on somebody, but I do think that the time that Trey Dean got is going to really pay off for Florida down the road. You know, it almost looked like they were thinking that Amari Burney may end up moving into linebacker. And if he does that, I think he might be really good at it. But if he does that, then, you know, they're going to need Steele to come in immediately. And that's one of the nice things about some recruit the quality of Steele. I mean, he's one of those guys who you do think can come in and contribute right away and play on the outside and be a lockdown guy, at least, you know, maybe on the second receiver for the opposition. So, yeah, it's great to see these guys coming in early, especially on the offensive line. I mean, that's the area where I would have said, okay, that's where it's important, that and the defensive line. So, you know, that's the place where maybe it's missing a little bit. And you'd like to see more people coming in there. But, you know, I think that's an area where Mullen is clearly going to put an emphasis on finishing out the class in February. I would expect to see a defensive lineman or two sign there. And, you know, they'll just have to get up to speed really quickly in the fall.
All right, Will, so this week, your article that you released on Read and Reaction, pretty much we kind of go see where recruiting stands when we're coming up for this 2019 season. So we're kind of done with the rankings, done with where Florida's be looking at, where they'll be ranked in 2019, and we'll count now these early enrollees and kind of where we stand with recruiting moving forward. And Will, your latest article, you answered a question that many of our listeners have out there. I've gotten it. You've gotten it. And the question is, how many players can Florida take in this class, and kind of how it all goes about and how it all happens? And it's becoming a little more clear with the latest commits and signees and early enrollees. And to add this kind of sad breaking news also on Tuesday that went out not too long before we recorded, Florida redshirt freshman linebacker Nick Smith will be forced to give up football due to a medical condition that he announced via his Twitter on Tuesday. Smith appeared in just one game in his 2 years at Florida and the season opener this past year. He'll have to call it a career due to a, quote, neck injury that could have caused permanent paralysis if not found. So Smith will take a medical hardship and no longer factor into Florida's scholarship math for the 2019 season. Will, it's tough to see news like this, and we've seen it a good bit at Florida recently in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just really our best wishes out to Nick Smith, and certainly thank him for the time he put into the program. I mean, whether he was on the field or not, he was participating in the culture that Mullen's been building and been working his butt off, I'm sure. And so, you know, we're sad to see that he's not going to be a part of the team out there on the field, but certainly he's going to be a Gator for the rest of his life, and we wish him the best. And also, you know, just are really thankful that we didn't find this out because of a hit on the field, that he found it out through whatever physical they were doing or whatever sort of testing he was having done. So, you know, our best wishes to him, and hopefully he finds a place in the game or is able to use the degree that he gets at Florida to do something great. So, you know, best wishes to him. But yeah, you mentioned the guys. You know, we had James Robinson who had health issues. We had Randy Russell who had health issues. I mean, that happens, right? You get attrition in classes, which is one of the reasons why I wrote the article that I did, because, you know, you're allowed to sign 25 guys a year, which means you should have 100 guys over a 4-year period. You start adding in red shirts. It's like, all right, how do you only have 85 scholarships? And this type of thing is how that happens, is that, you know, not necessarily this, sometimes guys transfer because they want to play more. Sometimes guys transfer because of whatever, you know, because of hardships and things like that. Sometimes they leave the program because of some sort of police issue or something like that. We saw that with Justin Watkins last year. Yeah. So what ends up happening is, I mean, there's really two rules when you look at recruiting. The first is you can have 25 signees a year, and you can do some fancy accounting with that. So if I signed 20 people last year and I have five early enrollees, I can really, you know, I can sign 30 this year because I can count back five of those. Now, the SEC caps that because they only allow you to sign 28 letters of intent a year. But what it does mean is you could sign 28, bring in two transfers, and have 30 people come in and join your team. You just have to have the 80, you have to have scholarships available to do that. So you're only allowed to have 85 scholarship players, which is why you always see them sort of at the end of spring camp. You know, hey, if there's a scholarship left over for that year, they'll award it to a walk-on, and they sort of show that on Twitter and that sort of stuff. It's just because they came up a scholarship short, and so they can give out that scholarship to somebody who's earned it. So if you look at where Florida stands right now, they have 61 returning scholarship players as of this moment. When you take Smith out of the equation, they've got 23 signees or 23 commits, not all of them assigned. And so they're at 84 scholarships right now, which would make you think that they've only got one more guy they can sign. But that's not necessarily true, because if there are guys on the team, and I'm not going to speculate who it would be, but if there are guys on the team who decide they want to transfer, if there are guys who have graduated and decide they'll get more playing time if they transfer someplace else as a graduate transfer, you know, that opens up a scholarship, which means that Florida could sign one more when that happens. And so I'm sure Mullen's going to be sitting down, or has already sat down, with players who have expressed unhappiness with their playing time, or who want to transfer somewhere because they want to be closer to home, or whatever the case might be. And he probably knows exactly how many scholarships he's going to have based on the conversations with the players that he's had. So then the next thing you have to look at is how many signees are you allowed to have this year just based on the numbers? And when you go back and look at it, because they only signed 20 guys last year, they had three transfers. And then by the math I did, they were allowed to count one early enrollee back to 2017 as well, which means that they can count back three to 2018 in this 2019 class, which means they can sign five more guys, is basically the long and short of it. They could sign a full class of 28. Now, that you have to open up those five scholarships, because if you have five more signees, that takes you to 89. So you'd have to clear four scholarships at that point. But they have the capacity to sign those guys. But that would very much limit their ability to sign people next year. And so I'm imagining that Mullen's probably going to want to maintain some of the flexibility. If he gets top 50, top 100 guys to recruit, he's going to absolutely take them. If he's filling a class to 27, 28 with guys ranked in the 800s and 900s, I don't necessarily expect that to happen.
Yeah. And you talk about transfers there as well. So Jonathan Greenard, the name that's brought up from the Louisville transfer, probably, you know, a lot of Florida talk out there about that. So we'll kind of see where that goes, but you know, that's what it has to lead up to with this latest Nick Smith, you know, that opens up a scholarship there as well. So, well, if I'm looking at it right, if you said this, so I guess Florida would be at 84 now. If you don't count the one black, you know, you don't count him just yet there either, but that gives Florida 84, I guess, with Nick Smith out.
Well, I was actually counting to one black in
the 84.
So, but if you sign someone and they don't qualify, they still count against your signing,
yeah.
which is a game you have to play depending upon whether you think someone's going to qualify. It's one of the reasons why it's a risk to sign someone who you don't know whether they're going to be able to. But you know, I have no line of sight in terms of who will and who won't. It's just a question that is when you start looking at the numbers, that does become important, because that's part of the attrition. Same thing with injuries. The guy no longer counts on your scholarship count, but he still counts towards that 25 that you signed. And so really it boils down to an accounting game where you have to figure out, where do I count my guys? But each guy you bring in has to count against one of those 25 man roster, or one of those 25 man cycles. And you just sort of have to move the parts around until you get it to the right place. So the early enrollees you mentioned, there were significantly more than three. So they can count back three to last year if they would like, which opens up more flexibility in 2020. It's one of the reasons why you see Clemson a few times has signed like 17 guys. One of the reasons they do that is that gives them a whole lot more flexibility for the next year when they want more guys. And you see that this year. I think they have 27 guys that they've signed this year. Alabama has 28 after only signing 22 last year. So that's how you get a team like Alabama this year, who's just signing everybody under the sun, and you're sitting there going, they're at 28. How come they, you know, why are they so high? And one of the reasons that they're so high is because they signed less last year than their allotted amount.
And they're popular gray shirting.
Well, that too. I mean, you know, and it's amazing that guys keep going there for You know, again, I mentioned it, 8 carries a game or whatever Najee Harris was getting. And you know, he's willing to put up with it based on the perks that he gets for coming to Tuscaloosa. So, you know, it's an interesting machine that he's built there. And you know, whether that's sustainable or reproducible is really an interesting question. I think we might be seeing whether it is up in Athens.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And I don't think it's going as smooth there. So for the time being, I guess we can definitely say that. So, well, let's take a look at this weekend. A visit's going to start taking place this weekend before we get to the viewer question that I kind of wanted to get to. Guys, you know, they hope, the Gators hope that they can get in this class and visiting this weekend. Wide receiver commit RJ Henderson will be on campus, who just committed last week. Cornerback Kyir Elam, athlete, playmaker Mark Anthony Richards, defensive lineman Charles Moore, defensive end Smith Dilbert, and those recruits headline this weekend. And Elam and Mark Anthony Richards are top targets on the board for the Gators. You know, you pair Elam and Steele together, and that's something special. You got two top flight cornerbacks there to go behind Henderson and Wilson. Going into this fall, both I would expect to get major playing time if you compare Elam with Steele. So hopefully that's the case where Florida can continue that DBU tradition. Steele looks to be a Florida-Georgia battle. I expect Elam to take every one of his visits. I don't think Florida could do anything really to shut it down this weekend. So that's going to go. He'll take all of his visits. He said he may make his decision before the February signing day. But I do expect Kyir Elam to take all his visits here. Mark Anthony Richards, playmaker role here. You know, Will, it's kind of funny. I'm going to call it the playmaker role. I'm not calling it the Percy role anymore because it can't be duplicated. I'm going to quit calling it that. It's just going to be called the playmaker role now. Used to look to be a Florida-Auburn battle. This is the one the Gators may try and push for a commitment this weekend to get him in the fold here. I don't know if we'll hear about it or not, and you know how silent commits go sometimes, but I think this is one Florida may try and push for, and you know, I think it's good to get RJ Henderson on campus after he just committed last week. Hopefully Florida can wrap up where he doesn't want to take any more visits to any other schools, even though he spurned FSU last week. He still may visit there, so it'd be good if Florida can just come out of this weekend, get him not to take any more visits and get his signature in February. Defensive lineman Charles Moore is coming off a commitment to decommitment from Mississippi State, where he committed to Mullen there. So the Gators need him along the defensive line, and we're trying to fend off mainly Auburn here, but also look out for Tennessee and FSU as they're also in the mix. And also along the defensive line, Smith Gilbert coming in from New Jersey, 3-star defensive end, where Penn State looks to be the team to beat. And also offensive lineman Ari Henry also visiting, but not sure if Florida will take another offensive lineman in this class with 7 that they've already gotten, but they are going to bring in another offensive lineman for a visit. So some big names here, Will, for the final push before February signing day.
Yeah, I mean, we won't know where we stand after this weekend, but I think Florida will know where they stand after this weekend for a vast majority of it. And you know, you look at the commitment of Henderson. I think that was a surprise to me, at least. That wasn't something that we necessarily expected. So hey, you know, really sort of being able to pull somebody away from Willie Taggart, pull somebody away from Florida State, a top 120 ranked receiver, I think is a big deal. And then you look at Steele, obviously, is the prize from the weekend, and bringing in somebody who's a top 50 recruit. Recruit somebody on the corner to really sort of further that DBU tradition, and certainly if they can add Elam to that, and then if they can add Mark Anthony Richards, then at that point you're really talking about a recruiting class that's getting into the top 10. I still think, I mean, you know, when you look at the top 5 teams, there's a pretty significant gap between really the top 3 or 4 teams and everybody else. Bill's talked about this quite a bit on Twitter, where, you know, really between 7th and 12th, there's not a whole lot of differentiation. And that's kind of what we're going to see, is that if Florida hits on everybody, they'll go to the head of that class. And if they don't hit on everybody, they'll sort of be towards the back. So really what you're looking at is 7th to 12th nationally, probably 5th or 6th in the SEC. Not historically what guys like Zook and Meyer and even Muschamp have done in their second year, but loads better than what McElwain did in his second year. So, with the with the coaching that we saw this year and all that sort of stuff. I'm excited to see what he can do with these guys. And one of the thoughts I had is, you know, you got Marco Wilson, you've got Trey Dean, you got Amari Burney, you got Chris Steele, you've got Kyrie Elam hopefully coming in. I mean, all of a sudden you're dealing with that problem we were talking about at Georgia, right? Where you've got too many guys to go on the field at any one time. And it's been a while since we've talked about Florida having too many guys to go on the field at any one time at various positions, right?
Yeah, maybe running backs lately, but the only place we've been able to say that about.
Yeah, well, and it's always been one of those things where you're an injury away from being really, really thin. And you can't say that on the defensive backfield if they get Elam. You know, at that point, you've got Steele and Elam, two top 100 players who should be able to come in and play pretty early if, you know, you have some sort of injury to Henderson or Wilson or Dean or Burney. And, you know, you get those six guys out there, all of a sudden you got a lot of flexibility that you can do within Grantham's scheme. So, you know, very important weekend. I think they'll know a lot about what's coming. Certainly if Richards commits, then I think it really sends a signal that, you know, it seems like Elam's a pretty heavy lean towards Florida, but we'll see. But, you know, if they can pull in both of those guys, I think you're looking at finish in the 7-9 range. And obviously then if they can pull in another defensive lineman, you probably even do better than that. So exciting times, and certainly the clothes that Mullen has been putting on recently is pretty impressive, and we'll see where everybody ends up in February.
All right, so there's a look at recruiting coming up this coming up weekend for the Gators. And Will, I get notifications when I go and look at what we do on YouTube, and I can get notification for the comments and stuff there. And one that really caught my eye just because it took a lot of time to send us this question here, and it really caught my eye and a lot of thinking here opinion here, actually, of the viewer question sent from on YouTube. Liquid Flames says, I love this podcast. I have not missed a single snap of Florida football since Steve Spurrier's final season. Thanks for all the work you guys put in the show. I have just a question for you and everyone else here that'd like to help out. You and everyone at Florida keeps talking about the Gators standard, which has been defined as getting back to competing for national titles. I respect the sentiment, but I'm also a realist. What is it going to take for Florida to get up to Alabama's level in order to compete for a national title? Because I think we can all agree until Saban retires, they are going to be the team on both the SEC and the national stages. The path to the Gators standard of playing for national titles goes through Alabama. How did they traverse that path? Georgia couldn't do it, and this year's Georgia team was one of the best Georgia teams of my lifetime. I just wish when they talk about the Gators standard, they'd explain how they're planning to get there through Alabama. Without a Tebow-esque season, I just don't see it happening. I'm sorry. I just wonder what you all see that I'm missing. So, I thought throw my answer out there first. And first of all, I do agree with the path that it's going to take to get there. Yes, it goes through Alabama, and to a certain extent, it goes through Georgia as well, since Florida has to play them every year. I think it's okay to question how Florida is going to do it because of the run Alabama is on. No one has been able to consistently defeat them in the SEC, and it's probably not slowing down anytime soon. The path starts with getting the right coach, and I believe Florida has that. We saw other coaches can get there, and yes, I know that was during a very down SEC East, but you know, McElwain did get there, but we knew the limitations that were there and the reliances on some great defenses. So Mullen is already raising the overall talent level in recruiting, and early signs say he's developing that talent as well as the talent that was already on the roster. So, you know, now to get back to the quote, you know, Gator standard, you know, I hate to sound like we're beating a dead horse here, but you know, but raising the talent level to elite, because I believe that the coaching is Lou Mullen, and what we've seen from his time at Mississippi State, from what he did in his first year at Florida, I believe he's the right coach to get that done. And you know, if we can just get the elite talent to pair with it, or you know, we see finding that great transcendent quarterback that it takes, and we saw it. We've seen it time and time again, you know, in Oklahoma, what Clemson's been able to do with their quarterbacks. You know, that can be a great equalizer or even more when you saw it was more than an equalizer when Clemson and Alabama faced. It was a butt whooping behind a true freshman transcendent quarterback. So, you know, now I don't think it has to come down to Saban retiring as long as you raise that talent level to that point. Now, the thing is, those things may coincide. You know, how much longer does Saban have? You know, if Florida kills it in recruiting in 2020 and 2021, does that somehow coincide with Saban leaving or retiring? So it's about how fast you think the Gators' standards should be restored. You have to be happy with 10 wins in year one. It's a great starting point. It's something to build off of. And we're all excited for next season and things that could, and if they could break the right way, you know, Florida's capable of beating Georgia and winning the East. So then you get your shot in Atlanta, and that's probably against Alabama. And then we'll get to measure where Florida is against Alabama and that Bama machine. So, you know, if we get to see that in year two, then it's a pretty clear answer of how close we are to that Gator standard. And, you know, I also like to consider myself a realist when it comes to discussing the Gators, but also feel that the pieces are in place to restore the Gators standard. I just think it's just all about when it happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things that we need to consider. The first is that what is the Gator standard? So if you look back at Steve Spurrier when he came in, I mean, the first year 9-2, second year 10-2, third year 9-4, fourth year 11-2, fifth year 10-2, and then in 95, in his sixth year, he goes 12-1, loses to Nebraska in the national championship game, and then in 96 goes 12-1 and wins the national championship over Florida State. But if you look at the bowls that they were in, I mean, it's Sugar Bowl, Sugar Bowl, Sugar Bowl, Fiesta Bowl, Sugar Bowl, Orange Bowl, Sugar Bowl. Like, I think 8 of the 11 years that Spurrier was there, they were in one of those big time bowls. So I think that if you look back historically at Florida since Spurrier took over, the Gator standard is you are competing for big time bowls, that you're going to play big games against big time competition, and that there's going to be that electricity in the air every time you play, and that you absolutely demolish teams like Kentucky and South Carolina and Vanderbilt and those sorts of things. That's, you know, that basically there's four games a year where you're like, all right, I'm nervous about this, and every other game you walk out there knowing you're going to win 55-7. Was sort of the standard that Spurrier hit. And then if you go back and you look at Zook, obviously that fell off, goes 8-5, 8-5, 8-5, but built up the talent level to a point where when Urban Meyer took over, goes 9-3, 13-1, wins the championship, 9-4, and 13-1, wins the championship, and 13-1, the only loss was to Alabama. So you know, I think Meyer sort of took I think Zook was sort of those first 3 years with maybe worse coaching on the field of Spurrier's first 3 years, because before Spurrier took over, they were going 7-5 and 6-6 an awful lot. And if you look at it, you know, Zook takes over, they're going 8-5, but he's building up the talent level. Urban Meyer takes over, that first year goes 9-3. The second year they have that big jump. But really, in the post Spurrier transition, it's about a 5-year period. And so if you look at it in that way, you say, okay, well, they went 10-4 under McElwain, 9-4 under McElwain, but then 4-7. And that 4-7 sort of coincides with that 2015 recruiting class that was, what I think, 23rd overall nationally. And now Mullen is starting to slowly build that talent, goes 10-3 his first year. But, you know, I think we're probably 2 or 3 years away from seeing Florida really being a dominant competitor, or somebody who that electricity's in the air when they're playing Alabama, where it's like, all right, this is a 50-50 proposition, not, you know, a 90-10 proposition or an 80-20 proposition. I mean, when you look at the recruiting numbers, I mean, you mentioned it. So Alabama from 2000, if you count this year, from 2016 to 2019, will have signed 76 blue chip guys to 37 for Florida. That's not the end of the world. I mean, you look at Clemson, they've only signed 46. So they're much closer to Florida. However, if you look at Clemson, they've signed 22 top 100 guys in that same time to 11 for Florida. And they've signed 11 5-stars to zero for Florida from, well, I guess 2 to Florida if you count 2015 to 2018. So, you know,
and that's good, obviously, because people love to bring up Clemson when discussing Florida. So, you know, you can look at recruiting rankings, and, you know, we do it a lot too. But when you broke it down, just how you did, and the top 100 guys that they have that Florida doesn't have, you know, there's the difference right there.
Well, there are a lot of ways to slice it, but really, when you look at it, 5-star guys. guys turn into All-American NFL players a lot more often than four stars, and that's what's happened at Clemson. Now, I think you can make a case that Dabo Swinney has done an unbelievable job at developing those guys, mm-hmm. and that he has not had a whole lot of misses on the five stars that he's brought in, but I don't think you can say that five stars aren't important. I mean, hell, Trevor Lawrence just won the game the other night and was unbelievable, and he was the number one overall recruit, and the backup quarterback coming into the year wins the job, you know, four or five games in, and all of a sudden Clemson's unstoppable. So, you know, I wrote an article about a year ago, and I was looking at the last 14 national champions, you know, from 2017 back 14 years. And the average national recruiting ranking was 6.1. The average conference recruiting ranking was 2.1. And they averaged 14.3 blue chip players. The absolute minimum was Auburn in 2010. And they had a 14.8 recruiting ranking. They were sixth in the conference. They had they averaged eight and a half blue chip players over a 4-year period before the year they won the national championship. That profile kind of fits Florida when you look at that. So is there a chance that they could win a title? Absolutely. But that Auburn team had Cam Newton, and they also went 7-0 in one score games. So it's a really rare occurrence that a team with a transcendent quarterback would be that fortunate in one score games and would be able to pull out games where, quite honestly, the talent differential was significantly stacked against them. I mean, the game that Newton brought them back against Alabama, I think, is probably, you know, what, a 5% proposition maybe that they win that game once they end up down. But they were able to pull it out. They were able to win it, and they're able to call themselves champions. So, I mean, if you really look at it, for the most part, the average – if you look at average recruiting rankings in terms of who fit that bill, who was better than six, who had more blue chips coming into this year, it was Ohio State, USC, Alabama, Florida State, Georgia, and Texas. So obviously Florida State struggled, USC struggled, but the other four were all in the top 10. And Clemson's not on that list because their average recruiting ranking is lower than that. And obviously Clemson won the title. So, you know, you don't have to be top three. But it obviously took Swinney a while to build that program too. And so I think you're probably looking at one or the other, right? Yeah. You're either looking at top three recruiting classes to get into that sort of 4 to 5 to 6 average. How long does that take you to go? Or really building up the program, bringing in some of those five-star guys, making sure you hit. So, you know, they hit on Taj Boyd. They hit on Deshaun Watson. And now they've hit on Trevor Lawrence. Basically, they had the Kelly Bryant experiment for a year, got demolished by Alabama last year, and said, screw it, we're going to bring in somebody better than Tua.
Bryant still led him to a playoff appearance. I mean, it's still got him, you know.
It's not like it was a completeness, but I get the point. And I don't want to diminish the fact that Clemson has not had top 10 classes consistently because it's not something that you should overlook, but I think it's something you shouldn't count on. So again, if we're talking probabilities and if you're talking about who they have to play to get to the playoff, you know, the only team ranked ahead of them in the ACC from a recruiting standpoint is Florida State. And right now, Florida State is not scaring Clemson at all based on how they've played and how they're recruiting, because Florida State is bringing in recruiting classes worse than Clemson this year.
What I feel better about right here, and I was thinking about this last night, and going against, you know, your in-division rival and the gap, you know, the gap between Florida and Georgia are, when you look at how this season finished and where Florida will be ranked going into next season, is very negligible right now. People will pick Georgia, but Florida not so far behind. And you pick Clemson and you compare them against Florida State, there is a massive gap, and it's not even close. So, you know, you look at our main in-state rival in another conference and compare them to what they have to face in their division every year to what Florida has to face. You kind of have to like that proposition right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, if you ask me, would I rather have Florida State situation or Florida situation, I'm going to take Florida State anytime. I guess what I'm saying, though, is I do think we need to be patient. So last year in that same article, I basically said, hey, Texas is the team you need to look for, who's sort of the dark horse. They had very similar national recruiting rankings to Florida from 2015 to 2017, but then took a jump up to number three in 2018 in Herman's transition class, and all of a sudden was starting to push the boundaries of those recruiting averages. And Lincoln Riley's doing the same thing at Oklahoma. He's really starting to make some inroads, bring in some five-star guys, and I think they're ranked fifth this year. So other teams are bringing in coaches, paying them big dollars in other conferences to get up there too. And as that happens, I think what we're going to see is sort of a separation. You know, Michigan State made it to the national champ or made it to the playoff a few years ago as the fourth ranked team in the conference in the Big Ten. I think we're going to see that less and less as sort of the rich get richer. I mean, that's sort of what we've seen with Alabama. It's what we're starting to see with Clemson. Georgia's trying to break into there, and Florida's going to have to do that too. And, you know, you can be third in the conference and still be behind Alabama and Georgia and still compete. Yeah. If you're sitting up there and you're sort of saying, hey, the evaluation between the first ranked team and the fourth ranked team, no big deal. But once you see that drop off from maybe the third or fourth ranked team down to the seventh or eighth, it's significant in talent, and it's significant when you have an injury. I do think that the last couple of years, it's just one data point, obviously, or two data points. But I think the last couple of years where there have been backup quarterbacks who've won the national championship are reflective of the importance of having that kind of depth. And you know, Clemson is going to continue building it. Alabama is going to continue building it. Georgia is going to continue build it. And so Florida's going to have to as well. And, you know, you hope the coaching can overcome it until you get to that point. And I think that's maybe what we saw with Spurrier back in 1990. You know, he takes over, he papers over some of the shortcomings in his quarterbacks until he finds Danny Werfel. And once he found Danny Werfel, then everything took off. And I think the same thing probably is true of Mullen, that, likely the takeoff point is going to be when he finds his Danny Werfel or when he finds his Tim Tebow. And until that point, Florida's probably going to sit in that, you know, 11-2, 10-3, 9-4 range until they really get that elite quarterback.
Which is much better than what we were coming off of, Will. And hey, look, that's kind of when we were looking at recruiting last year and where Mullen finished and hey, look, when he was hired and in his history, that's kind of the path I thought it would take. Eventually, I still think the elite recruiting gets there. And, hey, 2020, 2021 might be those classes with the starts that we're seeing there. So, well, I think when it comes to the Gator standard, I think from a Gator Nation point of view, I think we can sit here and say we have confidence in what Mullen does on game days.
Yeah, well, and winning the Peach Bowl is fun. Winning the Orange Bowl is fun. Winning the Sugar Bowl is fun. I mean, you know, the goal of winning the SEC and the national championship are lofty goals, but I think we do need to still keep take into account that the journey is part of the fun, right? And so if it's just, hey, national championship or bust next year, you know, is that really, A, fair to the coach, or is it fair to you know, is it fair to the players? I mean, at the end of the day, this is a development process. You hope it's actually fun to be the underdog. I remember that 13-1 year where we demolished Cincinnati in the bowl game. It didn't even seem like the players were having fun that year. Certainly Urban Meyer wasn't having fun. And, you know, it's sports. It's supposed to be fun. And so, you know, I think if you go 11-2 and you win the Sugar Bowl every year, it means that you were one game away or a couple of plays away from playing for the championship. Eventually you're going to get over that hump. As long as we don't have any more 4-8 or 4-7 clunkers, man, I'm all right with it.
Yeah, well, I'm going to say it too. You know, eventually we may look back at this 2018 season, and it may be the season that was the start of bringing back the Gator standard there.
Hashtag fire Saban, man. Once they get him out of there, then Mullen can take over.
Can we keep it going and maybe it just comes to fruition? Can we just keep it going?
Yeah. I'll sell t-shirts, man. If people want to send me money, I'll send them a t-shirt.
Or maybe it's starting to rumor, you know, the reason he looked so lost and disinterested in the national championship game was because he's got NFL on the brain. You know, I mean, come on. We can come up with something.
He's going to go be Kingsbury's defensive coordinator.
What? Is that the best fall forward ever?
I mean, I just like how you can see what interviews, so he paid it, so he quit.
How do you get fired at Texas Tech and become an NFL head coach? I don't know.
I don't know. Will you fire me so I can like get on ESPN?
Oh, that's a good one. There we go. Maybe it'll happen. You got to fire yourself from your website too, though. So
I'll do it if I get on ESPN.
That's true.
I am available.
What you got coming up on that website, Will?
Hey man, we're gonna have actually a look back at Frank's. There are some unique things that I've been looking at in terms of his play and how much he improved this year compared to some of the other quarterbacks in the SEC. So I'll be writing about that this week. And then now that the AP polls are out, and I think the FPI will be updated for ESPN, looking at Mullen and his coaching ability and what that means going forward. And really, sort of when you look at the new hires from from this past year, who was the best coach, who was the best hire, who was the worst hire, you know, and I'll give people a hint. Taggart's pretty low on the list.
You can catch that at readandreaction.com. We'll cite there. Talking Gators in college football. Will, if I remember right, the FPI is not too kind to Florida as much as the final polls are. And if I'm not mistaken as well, Kentucky's not even in their top 25 of the FPI.
Yeah, Mississippi State's like eighth. Yeah. The FPI is weird because close losses to good teams impact you less than a big loss to a good team and those sorts of things. But the nice part about the FPI is that it gives you where everyone is. And so, you know, Florida State finishes this year ranked, what, 75th or something. Yeah. And you can actually start to look at, okay, how did Taggart perform for this particular metric versus versus the recruits that he's got in the room? And so that's sort of the comparison I'm probably going to be making. And so the FPI gives you something that allows you to go through instead of, you know, they cut off most of the polls at 25. And so you don't get the full effect of how bad Taggart truly was.
In a 64-team playoff, FSU still would not have been in it. So that's
I saw somebody today on Twitter said FSU did make the top 25. It was just Fresno State at 19.
The real FSU? man, it feels good to win again and make jokes.
Yeah, it doesn't get old, does it? Doesn't get old.
No, it doesn't. All right, Will, that'll do it for this episode of Gators Breakdown. You can find Will on Twitter at WillMilesSEC, and again, his site, readandreaction.com. I'm the host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.